just a few moments into that. My name is Ian Brew. I'm one of the pastors at the Cypress campus of Houston's First Baptist. For those of you who don't know where Cypress is, that's on out the ways. It's not another country or anything like that. But anyway, it's a little ways from here. So anyway, it's quite a privilege to get a chance to be here and spend some time with you guys. Before we get started, I just wanted to make an announcement about one thing. On your tables, you have this little card, and it's an event that's going to be sponsored by our downtown campus that meets here each week, and it is called Revisioning Desire. And Professor Russell Minnick, who is a brilliant guy, has some amazing perspectives on different things, is going to be talking about just this idea of talking about desire. And so that'll be something you want to check out. It's July 8th. You've got some information there on your table. And so it's worth checking out. So once again, it surely is a privilege to be here. And so and I'm excited. We're going to be in the book of 1 Samuel. We'll be in chapter 3 in particular. Some time ago, obviously a long time ago, when the telegraph was the only real method of long-distance communication, there was an ad in the paper, and that ad had said that there was somebody who could interpret Morse code. They were looking for somebody who could do that job. And so this guy was responding to that ad in the paper. He goes into what was a busy office. He goes in there. There's a lot of hubbub, a lot of hustle and bustle going on in there. He goes to the receptionist table. There's directions to go ahead and take the application, fill that out, and have a seat. And so he goes and does that. He notices that around the room there were 7 other guys who were doing the same thing. And so it's a competitive job. And so in the midst of all of those things, there they were. They were sitting. And after some time, this guy got up. He's the last one there. He gets up. He walks to the office door, walks in to the back, and he goes in. Well, the rest of the people start looking around. They're wondering, well, what is this that's going on? Why, like, how can it be the case that this guy? Well, I mean, certainly he's messed up. Sometime later, the guy who was doing the hiring opens the door and says, "Hey, all of you guys can go home. We found our person." And they're, wait, how can that be? I mean, that guy came in last. You didn't even call us back. And he said, the whole time that you were in here, that message on Morse code was, if you're here for the job and you understand this, come right through the door. The job is yours. And so, in the middle of all that hubbub and all in the middle of all that was going on, only one of those guys stopped and listened to what was going on. Today, we're going to be talking about that idea of hearing when God speaks. When God speaks, can you hear him? You know, are we even aware that he's talking to us? We're not always attuned to what God's voice is, and sometimes we need a little bit of help to just point us in the right direction. I've entitled this little Bible study, Holy Headphones. How many of you have on your person right now some headphones? There's a few. Headphones have kind of been one of those things that we've really embraced. I mean, if we think just a generation ago, what did portable music or portable sound look like? Well, I mean, you had the guys with the ghetto blasters cruising through. They had it up on their shoulder. I mean, at least I guess that was portable in some sense. But at the same time, everybody else got to hear it as well. Maybe there were a few of you that had some cut-off shirts or some parachute pants, and you brought your cardboard box out somewhere and did your break dancing. I'm not going to ask about that because a few people might have to confess to something. And so, there was that. Well, then along came this thing by Sony called the Walkman. And the Walkman was this box that played cassette tapes. And what's funny is that more and more now, like, my children don't even know what those are. And so, you know, but these cassette tapes. And so it played these cassette tapes, and you could plug the headphones into a little jack there. And they had this foam that was there, and it would just press up against your ears. And while you could hear it and you could walk and you could enjoy that music, at the same time, everybody else had a tendency to be enjoying that music along with you because it wasn't very isolated. But as time went on, the headphones got a little bit more advanced. So too did the players. We went to a Discman. And so then we've got the Discman. Now, I don't know if any of you tried to run with a Discman. There's lots of skipping that happens when you run with a Discman. And so with the obvious problems of the Discman, we have to go to an MP3 player. And And so now we've got an electronic file that it doesn't have to spin. It doesn't have to do any of those things. We can get that information right off of there. And so we've got iPods or other MP3 players. And finally, we've said, well, you know what? Let's just get rid of that. We can just use our phones. And so now, you know, many of you maybe have an MP3 player, but it's stored somewhere. You don't even know where it is because your phone can now do all of those things. But now they've got MP3 watches. They've got all kinds of things. And so we're into this whole idea of having portable music or having things with us. Now, what's interesting as well is the way headphones have developed over the course of that time as well. Because now, just a short look at Best Buy's website shows that you have over-ear, those that actually cover your ear. You have on-ear headphones. You have in-ear headphones. You have earbuds. You have sports buds. You have wireless headphones for those that want to be tethered to the thing that's right there at their waist. There's all kinds of different headphones. The whole idea being that you want to be able to experience what you're hearing through those headphones in the best possible way. You want to hear you want to hear everything as crisply and as clearly as possible. Or in the case of noise canceling headphones, you don't want to hear anything crisply or clearly. And so we use headphones all the time, but we all could use holy headphones. How nice would it be to have something that we could just plug in so that we could hear crisply and clearly what it was that God was trying to tell us? So we're going to talk a little bit about this idea of maybe of having some holy headphones here this afternoon. 1 Samuel chapter 3. Verses 1 through 3, read this way. The boy Samuel served the Lord in Eli's presence. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare, and prophetic visions were not widespread. One day, Eli, whose eyesight was failing, was lying in his room before the lamp of God had gone out. Samuel was lying in the tabernacle of the Lord, where the ark of God was located. Just as a little bit of background about what's going on in this passage, this boy Samuel has been living at the temple, working with Eli, who was the high priest. Samuel was one who was dedicated to the Lord by his parents after his mother Hannah had prayed that God would open her barren womb and give her a son. She was given that son. She gave that son to the Lord. And so here he was ministering alongside Eli, learning about what the different priestly duties and things like that. And so here he is. He's in the city of Shiloh, which is where the tabernacle had been put up. This is at the end of the period that is typically known as the Judges period. And one of the common refrains that we read throughout the book of Judges is that there was no king in Israel, and everyone did that which was right in their own eyes. And so these people, doing what was right in their own eyes, just kind of continued on this continual spiral away from the Lord. And while different judges would rise up to redeem them, to bring them back to God, to rescue them from some oppressor, they just continued on down this spiral. And so the book of Samuel is pointing toward God's king coming on the scene. And so this boy Samuel is here. He's working in the tabernacle, and he's working at a time where we see in verse 1 that the word of the Lord was rare, and prophetic visions were not widespread. So there weren't a whole lot of people who were hearing word from the Lord. After all, as these people were continuing to spiral away from God, fewer and fewer were hearing from him. And so here's a time where there just weren't that many people hearing what God had to say. And so there he is. He's sleeping, and then we see that something happens there in the middle of the night. Verse 4. The Lord called Samuel. Remember, he hasn't been talking to people. The word of the Lord was rare. So verse 4, the Lord called Samuel, and he answered. He answered, "Here I am." He ran to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me?" "I didn't call," Eli replied. "Go and lie down." So he went and he lay down. Once again, the Lord called, "Samuel." Samuel got up, went to Eli and said, "Here I am. You called me?" "I didn't call, my son," he replied. "Go and lie down." Now Samuel had not yet experienced the Lord. Once again, the word of the Lord was rare, and these prophetic visions didn't happen very often. So he didn't know the Lord. because the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. That was in verse 7. Verse 8, once again, for the third time, the Lord called Samuel. He got up, he went to Eli, and he said, "Here I am, you called me. Here I am, you called me." Now, I have to stop and think about what Eli was thinking in the midst of all of this stuff going on. I have four children, four daughters. My oldest is 9. I have twins that are 7. Then I have one that's 2.5. The 2.5-year-old, while she's probably ready to be in a big girl bed, as she calls it, we've left her in the crib because there's just something nice about jail. You know, I don't want that kid to have access to the rest of the house. Let's keep her in jail as long as we possibly can. And for some reason, she's content with that. However, my older three, you put them in the bed, and then, you know, a little while later, you hear, pitter, 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 pitter. Somebody's coming out. What do you want now, Jada? Well, can I get a drink of water? And so usually even if it's that child's first time down, if it's the third child, you know, at that point I'm pretty frustrated. I'm like, go lay down. Many of you have probably been there as well. So I'd imagine that maybe that's something of what Eli is thinking at this point. Here's this kid that keeps coming over and keeps asking him, "Hey, why'd you call me?" He's like, "Go lay down." But we see here that he recognized maybe there's something else going on. The second half of verse 8, we see, then Eli understood that the Lord was calling the boy. He told Samuel, "Go and lie down. If he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. See, here's what's so cool about this. God uses faithful people to confirm that he is speaking to us. God uses faithful people, people who are plugged into who he is, to let us know that he's speaking to us. And so here's Eli, somebody who has been ministering before the Lord for a long time. We read in the chapter before that he's an old man at this point. He's approaching 90 years of age. And so this guy, he's up there. He's lived a life dedicated to the Lord, and he recognizes that something special is happening with this kid. God is trying to get in touch with him. And so I think that the same thing happens for us in community. It's important for us as Christians to surround ourselves with other people who are also attuned to what it is that God's saying. Sometimes we're not always aware of how he's speaking to us, or even that he is speaking to us. Before I was here at Houston's First Baptist, I was working as a church planter, a missionary in Spain, and so I was there for about 3.5 years. As my wife and I were praying through this decision about going and uprooting our family from where we were and going overseas and all the things that would look like and everything, there was a sense of trying to understand, is this really what it is that God's saying to me? And so I was working at a church at the time, which is good because they're sensitive to things like, hey, I feel God calling me somewhere. And so I went and talked to the guy who was one of the associate pastors. He was my direct supervisor, and I said, "Lindell, I got to talk to you, man. I know we have a good relationship, all this stuff. However, I have this sense that God might be calling me to go and do missions." To go somewhere else alone, leave what we're doing here. We got great things going on here, but I just have this sense that's what God's doing, and it's going to be a long, long trip as we anticipate this. So I'm not leaving tomorrow, but I'm thinking about over the next several months, I may be looking to try to transition. And I didn't know how that conversation was going to go, but his response was, "I can totally see you doing that. That would be perfect for you," and all that. Now, he may have been trying to get rid of me. I don't know. But the reality was it was such an affirmation that I was going the right direction. Here's somebody who I also trusted knew what God was doing in my life as well as his own and could say, yeah, that's it, man, jump on that. Interestingly enough, at the same time, I called a former pastor of mine who had been a mentor to me, and I called him up and I said, "Dr. Horner, I'm praying through, going overseas. I've made the first steps about doing that." At the time we hadn't talked to anybody about where specifically that would be, but my wife and I had both gotten a strong sense that a particular region in Spain was where we should go. And as I was talking to him, just asking him to pray for me, he said, you know, you would be perfect in a Western European setting. I think that that's exactly the, you know, and I didn't ask, it was unsolicited and all that, but it was like, well, actually, this is where I sense God leading. And so it was so cool because while I had some sense, God at the same time was bringing other people around me to point me the right direction. Where I might have made a decision, well, this is good, but this is also good. I had other people around who were saying, no, 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 this is the direction. Like, I could totally see how God's working in your life to take you to that point. And so God used Eli in that same way for Samuel. And so he uses faithful people to confirm that he is speaking. We'll look now in a little bit about what exactly it was that the Lord told Samuel. Verse 11, the Lord said to Samuel, I am about to do something in Israel that everyone who hears about it will shudder. On that day, I will carry out against Eli everything that I said about his family. In the previous chapter, in chapter 2, we read a little bit about Eli's sons, Phinehas and Hophni are their names, and they were making a mockery of the sacrifice. They were holding it in contempt is actually the language that is used. And so while Eli was aware of this, he apparently didn't do enough to stop it. And so we had heard about this. Now we're seeing a prophetic word about the results of that. And so again, verse 12, on that day I will carry out against Eli everything that I said about his family from beginning to end. I told him that I'm going to judge his family forever because of the iniquity he knows about. His sons are defiling the sanctuary and he has not stopped him. Therefore, I have sworn to Eli's family, the iniquity of Eli's family will never be wiped out by either sacrifice or offering. But so Samuel lay down until the morning and then he opened the doors of the Lord's house. He was afraid to tell Eli the vision, but Eli called to him and said, Samuel, my son. So just to kind of set the stage, we hear about all of this that Eli's family has done some atrocious things, some things that were offensive to God. The people have complained to Eli about it, but nothing yet has been done. And so now judgment is going to fall on the house of Eli. And so later on in the book of Samuel, we'll see how the sons die and that all of his family dies and all of the priests that came from his family die. It's definitely a tragic end. But here we actually get the words of that judgment that's going to be coming against him. So we saw here in the first part where we see that God uses faithful people to confirm that he is speaking to us. But secondly, we see that God uses faithful people to correct those who are not hearing his word. And so we'll continue then on in verse 15. He said, but Eli called to him and said, Samuel, my son, here I am, answered Samuel. What was the message he gave you? Eli asked. Don't hide it from me. May God punish you and do so severely if you hide anything from me that he told you. So Samuel told him everything and did not hide anything from him. Eli responded, he is the Lord. He will do what he thinks is good. I'm sure that was not the kind of message that Eli wanted to receive. When we think about, you know, God calling somebody to ministry, or when we think about the different places in Scripture where somebody was called to a specific task, it usually sounds a lot more glorious than your first task is, okay, Samuel, I've got a word that I need you to tell. Go tell Samuel, or go tell Eli, the guy who's raising you, the guy who you respect and all that, that his family is about to get wiped out because they're a bunch of sinners. That's a harsh thing for that kid to do. However, somewhere along the way, Eli and his family stopped hearing what it was the Lord was saying. They stopped hearing it. And so it took somebody else to come alongside and to give them that word of direction, that word of correction, and in this case, actually a word of judgment. Are there people around you who care enough about you, who love you, who can look at you and say, hey, you know, you've made this decision or you've begun to practice this particular behavior? You might want to stop and evaluate that. You might want to stop and say, hey, is this holy? Is this going to take you down the road where you want to go? Or is this going to take you, you know, farther afield or farther away from God? Those kind of people are critical, critical people for Christian life. How will we grow if we don't have other people coming alongside us to help us, direct us in the right direction? I absolutely love getting to be a parent. With those four girls, there's all kinds of entertainment. I can't think of anything more fun than laying on the floor and letting them just beat me up. They kick on me and pull my hair and twist my ear. I'm going to have cauliflower ear at some point soon. But I love that. But one of the cool things about that is that opportunity to help them make right decisions and take that next step the right way. Take a good step. Here's how you continue to grow in your Christian faith. Here's how you can continue to grow and be the person that God has always wanted you to be. We as parents work in that capacity, but we don't always do that with our peers. Likewise, we need to be able to receive that kind of instruction. There have been people in my life at different times that said, hey, Ian, you need to check yourself, man. You need to stop. You know, maybe the language you're using is a little bit too proud. Maybe you're coming off a little bit arrogant there, Ian. Back it off. There's been other things as well. Those people are so critical to make sure that we're able to continue on in our walk with Christ. People around us, community around us are going to help us grow and to be the people that God's called us to be. And ultimately, that's what we're about, doing and being the people that God has called us to be. So God uses faithful people to correct those who are not hearing his word. We continue on, verse 19. So Samuel grew, and the Lord was with him, and let nothing he said prove false. All Israel from Dan, which was way up in the north, to Beersheba down in the south, knew that Samuel was a confirmed prophet of the Lord. The Lord continued to appear at Shiloh because there he revealed himself to Samuel by his word. And chapter 4, verse 1, the beginning part says, and Samuel's words came to all of Israel. Now, here's what's so cool. Just at the beginning of this chapter, we saw that the word of the Lord was rare, and that there weren't very many prophetic visions. But here, something happened. God acted. God spoke to this guy. And now, over the course of just this one chapter, we see the word of the Lord going out to the people of Israel. And Samuel is now this person who's a mouthpiece to be able to do that. He's been somebody who's been called specifically to proclaim the word to the people around him. See, God uses faithful people to proclaim his word to those around them. He calls faithful people out to proclaim his word. Now, you don't have to be a pastor to be able to do this. You don't have to be a missionary to be able to proclaim his word. God's calling all of us in some capacity to be able to do that. After all, the Great Commission is that we all go out and make disciples. We all go out and make disciples. There's a certain, there's an amount of proclamation that has to happen in order to do that. We have to tell people. And so we're all, to some degree, called to be able to proclaim this. Yet at the same time, there are some people who are especially called. And those people within our community have often played a very important part in all of our lives. I think about when I was a teenager, we had a pastor of our church, and he was 6'10" tall. He was a big guy. And I was in high school, and the student section at that time was down here over here to the left. And so he was up there preaching. And I remember it as clearly as if it happened yesterday. He said, maybe God is calling you. I mean, he's looking over here, but that 6'10" guy just about poked me in the chest, you know, as he pointed that way. And it was one of those like, well, perhaps God is calling me. There was something about his particular proclamation at that point that, wait, maybe something's going on. Have there been people in your life who have been particularly bold in proclaiming the good news of Jesus Christ? Maybe particularly bold in just sharing how God is working in their life and working in your life and working in the lives of people around you. People who are just encouraging people. People who are just, you just look at them and you say, those people, that person is on fire for God. If you know those people, go and thank them. Go and tell them, hey, you've been an encouragement to me. The word of the Lord has come to me on account of what your faithfulness. God's called you to do something. You've done it. And now as a result, I get a chance to be encouraged. Thank you so much. See, as we close our time here, let's remember this Christian life isn't something that we do in isolation. God doesn't call us to just be by ourselves. He calls us to be a part of his church. He calls us to community. And so it's very important for us to surround ourselves with people who understand that as well. People who can confirm that God is speaking to you or what specifically it is that he's speaking to you about. People who can confront you. Those people who can correct you if you've begun to step away. And at the same time, those people who are just continually proclaiming alongside you how God continues to work. I know that there's the Christian radio station has that 30-day challenge about listening to Christian music for 30 consecutive days and how that'll change, that may change perspectives, and there's all kinds of testimonies to that. But the reality is that when you're around other people who are speaking about the things of God, speaking about how God's working, or even lifting prayers to God, like, that's going to be encouraging. It's going to rub off. And so being in community is so critical to accomplishing what it is that God has called all of us corporately to do. God wants to do some amazing things with us, but he doesn't want to use us just in isolation. He wants to use all of us. See, the word of the Lord wasn't just for Samuel. The word of Samuel's words went out to all of Israel. And so he was that mouthpiece of God to God's people, but he wanted God's people to hear his word. And so, too, that's where we are. As we close here, let's remember, let's step out of here thinking, am I surrounding myself with people, with faithful people who can guide me, who can point me the right direction? Am I surrounding myself with faithful people who care enough about me to correct me? Am I surrounding myself with faithful people who are bold enough to proclaim how God's working and using us? Let's not leave this place without making a commitment to go out and surround ourselves with those kind of people. Will you pray with me? Father God, we thank you so much for who you are. We thank you for the example that we see here in 1 Samuel.